I'm so excited. This is the best month of the year. My favourite show.
It is. I know, it's finally wonderful. I mean,
I'm so looking forward to it. And it's coming up.
We've gone three already, haven't we?
We're 2 weeks in. The third episode.
No, it's coming up tomorrow. The best show the BBC does. It's the Great British Sewing Bee starts tomorrow.
Oh, dear.
You've got no taste, Philistines. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Staggering Stories, podcast 446. Hello, this is me, Jean.
I'm Adam.
And I am Keith.
Yep.
Yes, we're a bit, well, bereft at the moment, aren't we?
We're a cut-down podcast.
Half are dead, but it happens. Casualties of war.
Yep. Other half are in stasis.
Yep. They stepped on a landmine, I think, didn't they?
Yeah. Not good.
We would like to say this would probably mean that this will be succinct, fast-moving, well-paced. So, without further ado, over to the news with El Presidente.
Doctor Who news?
Oh, yeah.
Moffat gets festive.
Woohoo!
Hot on the heels of his first new Doctor Who episode since 2017, former showrunner Stephen William Moffat, old battered and edible, has announced that he will be back for another year, this year's Christmas special. According to Moffat, the vast toffee,
Amen.
This will mark his 50th script from the series and will be quite possibly his last musical sting there, I think. Though he thought that when writing the 48th too. He has confirmed that he is not writing for the next year's series.
Although, Moffat lies.
This will also mark the first time since the Christmas and New Year's special properly existed that one has not been written by the incumbent showrunner.
Yeah.
The special has a rather generically Christmas-sounding episode title of Joy to the World. And can we expect it likely at midnight on Christmas morning in the UK and Christmas Eve evening in all places westward?
There were rumours a few weeks back, month back or so, that he'd written a Christmas special, but then RTD was talking about writing it himself. Yeah. Although maybe he was talking about the one after.
Could be.
I think may have been 2025.
I'm assuming they've done this year's Christmas special already, because they're already filming the next season.
I think they've already done 2025 Christmas special, yeah.
So is Moffat's Christmas special 2025 or 2026?
No, this year.
So it's 2024?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have to say, dropping an episode of Doctor Who at midnight on Christmas Eve is going to go down really, really well with all of Santa's little helpers.
Well, I'm assuming it will be shown Christmas Day, BBC One.
Yes.
Yeah, but for the rest of the world, if they celebrate Christmas, all of Santa's little helpers will be very, very upset.
Yeah. Oh dear, what a pity, never mind.
Yeah.
Red Dwarf!
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. 3-part TV special on the way.
Aye.
The boys from The Dwarf are once again donning their wigs, latex and curry stains to bring us a new 90-minute story, give or take, in 3 half-an-hour chunks. We have confirmation that regulars Craig Charles, Chris Barry, Danny John-Jules, wonderful chap, and Robert Llewellyn are all returning, and filming begins in the middle of October and running for about a month. Doug Naylor is likely to be back as the writer and possibly director, as with the recent 2020 specials, The Promised Land. The sci-fi comedy series first broadcast over 36 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, crap.
In February 1988 on BBC Two, and since 2009 has been an irregular series on the UK TV channel Dave. Unless we hear otherwise, we can probably assume this new story will also appear on Dave and eventually join the rest of the series on the BBC iPlayer.
Yeah. Well, it's good news there. Getting back to it, but yeah, it's been...
It's quite some time.
4 years since The Promised Land, and yeah.
Even when it was on BBC Two, there was long gaps between seasons.
There were occasionally, yeah, quite large gaps. Not getting any younger, but...
that's my fear. They're all getting rather crumbly now.
Yeah, sure, it'll still be good.
As I say, Robert Llewellyn is now starting to look like Crichton without the mask.
yeah. And that's what's happening with this other potential prequel, which Rob Grant is working on.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's have a new cast, apparently, with the old cast maybe cameoing.
It would have to. I mean, if it's going to be a prequel, it's got to have a... That seems to be stuck in development hell at the moment.
Yeah. Not like the film, which never got made.
Mm.
Anyway, Doctor Who news again.
Ooh.
Bonnie's book.
Not a Bonnie book.
No.
Bonnie's
book.
Ooh.
Hot on the heels of fellow Doctor Who companion actors Fraser Hines, Sophie Aldred and Alex Kingston, not to mention Mark Strickson and especially Ian Marta back in the day. Now, Bonita Melody Lissette Langford is getting in on the act and writing a Doctor Who novel.
Ooh.
Langford has a death-defying murder mystery in space for us called Doctor Who, Death in the Stars, a Melanie Bush mystery.
What is this, Star Trek?
Yeah, it could be. This story features Mel and Sablon Glitz and fills in at least some of what they got up to after they left Doctor in Dragonfire. We assume this will be suitable for all ages, though. The book will arrive as hardback, ebook, and audiobook, both download and CD, read by Bonnie Langford herself on the 22nd of August.
Okay, we'll see what that's like.
Yes, we've had quite a few in recent years.
Yeah.
Turning the hand, including Tom Baker, although he didn't write much of Scratch Man.
That was ghostwritten.
They all are to a certain extent.
He had the kernel of an idea, but I think that was more ghostwritten than...
Most of the kernel of the idea, I think, was actually Ian Martin's back in the day.
I think it was the original film that they were going to plan to do.
Ian Martin didn't really get much of a credit on that either, did he?
No, I don't think so. As I mean, I haven't read Scratch Man.
Nor me.
I haven't read the Alex Kingston or the Mark Strickson one either.
Oh, the Mark Strickson one was way back in the original Target day, isn't it?
Yeah.
To the something Dilemma.
Oh, yes. No, I may have read that one. I've read the Sophie Aldred one, because that was fairly recent.
Yes. Well, I heard her read it. I bought the audiobook.
They do seem to nowadays be about their characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think Ian wrote some that didn't involve Harry.
There was at least one Harry book that was him after UNIT, and I think there was two others, and the Turlough one was him after.
That was about Turlough, wasn't it?
Yeah, I do remember that one now, yeah.
Okay. Roger Corman.
Dead.
King of the Boot...
King of the Boo movies. Technically correct.
Yeah. King of the B movies, Roger William Corman, has been low-budgeted to death, aged an impressive 98.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. The small-budget films he was famous for meant he had stints of doing almost everything from writing, producer, director, and even actor. Corman's filmography includes directing and producing the likes of Swamp Woman,
dun.
It Conquered the World,
dun.
Attack of the Crab Monsters,
dun, dun.
Machine Gun Kelly,
dun.
House of Usher,
Little Shop of Horrors.
More the original, but yeah, he was involved in the musical one too.
Quoth. The Raven.
Quoth the Raven.
X, the Man with the X-Ray Eyes, etc., etc. As producer, his works included Death Race 2000, Grand Theft Auto, Piranha, and the Attack of the 50-Foot Cheerleader, which was absolutely...
We've got to review that one. We've got to review Attack of the 50-Foot Cheerleader.
It's a fairly recent one, I think.
Yeah. He helped many famous names get an extra rung on their careers ladders, such as James Cameron, Martin Scorsese, Jack Nicholson, Robert De Niro, and even William Shatner. Often, as an acknowledgement, Corman would occasionally act in small roles in films such as The Godfather Part 2, Silence of the Lambs, Apollo 13, and Looney Tunes Back in Action. All in all, Corman directed 55 films and produced nearly 400.
Yeah, 385 or something like that, yeah.
He was truly one of a kind in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I miss B movies to some degree.
Yeah.
Back in the bit for those folk what are young, you used to beat your shilling. When you went to the cinema, you had your main feature, But there was also a B movie. And it was like about 60 minutes. Sometimes it was as long as the main feature.
Yeah, maybe 90, yeah.
And they were always a bit naff. They were usually sci-fi or like Attack of the Killer Tomato kind of stuff. And they were really hammy, but they were brilliant in their own right.
Yeah, very low budget.
Exceedingly low budget, but they used to be sort of more effort put in. You know?
Yeah, done with a certain amount of love, but done in quite a hurry.
Yes.
Yeah, and he is producer, I think, of the Fantastic Four film that never got officially released.
Yeah.
I think it's on YouTube.
That was done so they could keep the copyright.
Yeah, he didn't know when he was making it, but it was never meant to be released.
Yeah.
Do we have any addendums?
No, I'm addendumed out this week.
There endeth the news. Okay, so we have three
count them
stories of series one.
Or 14
or the 2024 series.
I think that's probably the best way to describe it.
Of Doctor Who. So we're going to kick off with the first one of the three, which was aired as one of two to kick the whole series off. Space Babies.
Pause for music. Okay.
Who wants to start?
Well, a very, very quick plot synopsis, I think would be the best way to start. It's Ruby's first trip in the TARDIS.
It starts straight off with her going inside from the end of the last episode.
Yeah, straight off from the end of the last episode. We go quickly to show what we can do, as in prehistoric Earth, with shenanigans involved there.
Yeah,
the butterfly effect.
And then we go at a random set of numbers, so deep future. I can't remember when specific it is. It's not end of the universe, but it is quite a distance away, where they materialise on a space station. Mm. A space station that seems to be in a little bit of trouble.
Yes.
Seems to be broken down, random sparks, flame, and something living in the basement of said space station.
Something scary.
Something that is very scary. Very, very, very scary.
Scary enough to make the Doctor run away.
Yeah. And then we go up to a taller part of the space station and find the eponymous Space Babies. And again, shenanigans ensue there.
Yep.
And it is found out that various things are mostly a computer glitch. And we work out what is going on and then send the space station to a refugee world.
Yes.
By using diapers.
Methane. They do call them nappies throughout, despite this being a Disney Plus co-production.
Yeah.
I assume there's no different edit, different version for America.
I haven't heard of a different edit.
If anyone is in America, please let us know. Did they refer to them as diapers instead of nappies?
Yeah, there were two or three references to nappies. It was just one.
Right, well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
These first two in particular have divided opinion.
Yes.
I have to say, I've watched all of them twice.
Yep.
And the first time I watched this, I went, oh my. And there was bits of it I loved, which I'll go back to.
Yeah.
And bits of it I just couldn't, Went back and watched it a couple of weeks later, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a case of the whole pace, colours, the lighting, everything is so different to what we've had for a while.
Yeah.
It was almost jarring on the senses.
I think the look of the show has changed almost as much as it did when Jodie came in. I seem to remember us mentioning that it seemed to have gone up a level when Jodie started.
Yeah,
the productions, it looks
more
slicker,
cinematic.
And they have done that again. Yeah. Certainly with what stuck out to me mostly was the coloured switches on both the console and the various controls in the space station.
Okay.
They were illuminated. They were all more power has been used. And
I kind of like want them to turn LEDs. The Technicolor down a little bit.
You should see it in HDR on 4K with high dynamic range.
I have. My TV's a UDHD. HD, and it's like, the iPlayer broadcast is in
4K HDR.
But yeah, second time around, I initially thought the babies were the crew that had been de-aged.
Oh, okay,
Because it didn't make sense that you had these children that were, some of them were 18 months, 2 years.
They were actually 6 years old, but they'd been slowed down or stopped their aging at baby sort of age.
It didn't make sense. Even at 6 years old, they were still more intelligent and eloquent than a six-year-old would be, which is what made me think that they had been de-aged. And I think I was a bit disappointed that that was never explained. Are they hyper-intelligent or what?
I don't mean to disagree with you. I don't mean to contradict you. But that wasn't a factor for me. They are future babies. They are artificial. So obviously, to my mind, there had been some form of genetic tinkering there to make them more intelligent.
Yeah, or maybe in the womb or the jug or whatever, they were given extra programming earlier.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I get the feeling, like I said, they were artificial babies. So, yes, they were made more intelligent or they've been tweaked somehow. That came across to me.
The babies and the unborn babies in the jars were pretty creepy.
That was one of the things, because how they made the baby speak reminded me of the TikTok phase that went on for a while where they made babies sing. And it was Uncanny Valley.
It was definitely Uncanny Valley.
It actually made them look creepy rather than cute to some extent.
Again, I think this goes back to my old problem of giving Who a lot more leeway than I would other shows. That didn't affect or didn't counter me. I didn't come across that. But like I said, I am a lot more willing to give Who a little bit more. Mm. Is that if it had done something like Mandalorian or Star Trek, I would have been, oh, no. But as it was Who.
It didn't help that it was just their mouth.
Yeah.
So you had Eric in particular, who always seemed to look really upset.
Yeah, he did seem very a very worried baby.
But the eyebrows are saying that, but his mouth was just talking normally. It looked like he was about to burst into tears every moment, despite the fact he was talking relatively normally for a six-year-old. I don't know. It was weird, but he can get away with it just about, I think. Yeah.
There were bits of it that I thought were really good. I mean, excellent. I liked the fact that this series is having a quiet poke.
Yes.
And I wonder how many people in certain states of America got to the whole, but we can't turn the baby making machine off, but we can't look after the babies once they're born.
Once they're born, you don't care about them.
Yeah.
As long as they're born.
Yeah.
I think Fake Keith noted that and also noted a few comments on Facebook about that.
Oh, yeah.
Where for certain people, it hit home. Certainly, I think I can't remember their name, but one of them had to smuggle a friend across state lines to, you know.
Yeah. And I thought, that's aimed not at the UK viewers,
that
line.
No.
Especially when Ruby says, and they say, oh, it won't have been like this, and Ruby says, you kind of style.
So I know there have been law changes in America in certain states anyway, haven't there?
I was one that's going back to pre the United States.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
Anyway,
we're not getting into that now.
It is quite political as a whole so far this season.
Again, people have moaned and bitched and said, oh, well, it's getting too political. Mm-hmm. But, Green Death, pollution.
Yeah. Monsters of Peladon, the miners' strike.
Yeah, Curse of Peladon, the EU.
But, of course, it's only political to us now because everything is politicised.
Yeah.
If back in the day you said an evil corporation came more about profits than people, that wouldn't have been political. But now it is.
We're doing the same thing. It's just society's viewing it in slightly different ways.
Yeah.
I did love the scene downstairs in the Gook area.
Mm-hmm. The alien.
The alien area.
The aliens.
Boogies!
When she got boogied on and he started laughing.
He did.
And I had this real strong feeling and it threw me back to the Fourth Doctor taking the Mickey out of Sarah Jane in the pipes in Ark in Space and her
to get moving because she got stuck.
The dynamic between the two of them, the playfulness between the two of them. And the trust in a matter of seconds between the two of them mm-hmm. really reminded me of that Tom Baker, the Fourth yeah. Doctor, Sarah Jane yeah. dynamic. I yeah. really liked that.
In this one in particular, the Doctor does take the mickey a few times. He out yeah. in babies too. He deliberately frightens him by bringing up the bogeyman and laughing.
And laughs.
Yeah.
there is a mean streak to
there him. Is, yeah.
But going back to the gloop, some people didn't seem to listen, watch or understand. Because one of the complaints I picked up quite a bit on yeah. in Facebook is, why is the Doctor running? The Doctor shouldn't be afraid. Oh, why right. is he running? Because it's there in the dialogue. The roar yeah. of the monster is pitched.
17 hertz, wherever it is. Yeah.
The sound that makes you go, beep!
Yeah, yeah, it's there in the dialogue. If you're going to watch the thing, watch it.
Yeah. yeah, indeed.
The other thing I like, and I think this was a good one, is the Doctor didn't shy away from his own orphanage.
No,
he's, yeah, he's all being
a... RTD2 is really running with it.
Yeah, he is running with it, but I think he's...
We've embraced the Timeless Child, but we're not ramming it home, and we're not, at the moment, we're not expanding upon yeah. it.
No, and we're also what I would call softening in it, yes. making it acceptable for the likes yeah. of me that went, well, why should he have any affinity for the Time Lords then?
Yeah.
If he's not a Time Lord, if he's been abandoned and they've tortured him and all this yeah. kind of stuff. They're softening it in that they're sort of like, yeah, they're accepting his orphanage. His, well, I can't remember the word for being made an orphan, but that Found he's him. Then... But I am still a Gallifreyan. Yeah. I am yeah. still a Time Lord. Yeah. I am still this.
Fact, Ruby is the personification of that, isn't she? Because
yeah.
at the end of... Is it this episode? She says, I want to go see my mother yeah. now on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And she was talking about her adopted mother.
Yeah.
yeah.
So where they've just come from in the church on Ruby Road.
Yeah.
Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, go
the,
meet them.
The uniforms on,
oh,
on the
see,
screen.
Right.
Yeah. And I've got yeah. another point to come back at the end of Boom.
About one of the people on the screen.
Oh, yeah.
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 I did notice as well, and what you think, when... The Doctor thought about the moment with meeting Ruby, picking yes. up Ruby. Ruby wasn't thinking about it. The Doctor had the memory of him finding her outside the yeah. church.
Oh, yes.
And it yeah. snowed. Is yeah. the snow connected to him, not Ruby? Because it's when he remembered it. She's looking at him like,
yeah.
hello, come back, where are you?
I think, know. Off the top of my head... I think it's a connection between both of them.
Mm.
And that moment?
It's and that moment. It's the fact that she's there, mm-hmm. so that could cause the implement, mm-hmm. and maybe something to do with Time Lord Doctor's abilities.
Yeah.
To my mind, it's a gestalt.
Mm.
Mm, could be. The Doctor's Donna.
That's a good word, a gestalt.
And also, he says history has changed.
Yes.
Now she points.
Yeah, he turned yes. around and pointed, which I don't think was in.
She didn't in the first time around.
No.
So something going on there. But
Most definitely, most yeah. definitely. I think this is our Bad Wolf Torchwood moment.
Mm.
Yeah, even more well, blatant.
But, yeah.
But no, it had bits of it that I sat there thinking, as you say, like the uncanny valley aspect of the yeah. baby mouse and all the rest of it. I did like the nanny, and I thought it was very...
The nanny filter.
Yeah, I love the nanny filter. At one point, she obviously called them persons of unmarried parentage. Yeah, I wonder what the word was.
Illegitimate person, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, illegitimate person, yeah.
These systems are a crock of waste products.
Yeah, that's it, yep.
But I did like the poignancy of sort of like why she'd never seen them.
Yeah.
Didn't
yeah.
want them to see, yeah. Yeah. see her die or
vice
see
versa.
Them die.
Yeah. And I thought that was a nice... poignant
yeah.
point
mm,
and
yeah.
she played it so well, she really did
mm-hmm. plucked yeah. at the heartstrings a bit,
but yeah, I initially watched this and went, I really don't know.
When did you watch it, out of interest?
When it went live. I watched it. No, I watched it on the 6:20
on the BBC.
Right. I watched it on screening. There's no point in watching it at silly o'clock in the morning. No, I didn't actually.
I didn't wait up.
I know you would.
Given there were two of them. Did you set up for both of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's
about 1:30 by the time
that's finished. That's the thing. I normally don't go to bed till about 12:30.
Mm. Okay, so
that's
yeah,
my,
an hour later.
Yeah, that's yeah. my normal sleepy yeah. time. So
right. I'll say this with all of them. If you've watched it and you're like, oh, I'm not sure, go back and watch it a second time.
Yeah, definitely.
As daft as it sounds, it actually is...
Improves with age.
It does improve with the second viewing, and I think some of it is because the shock to the system of how it's different.
Yeah. And expectations. And...
Yeah. Mm. I try not to. I try to maintain my first impression. So I haven't watched any of these since airing. But I enjoyed it. Didn't enjoy it a lot. I did enjoy it. I thought it was maybe not the best season opener.
No.
That's
a strange one, isn't it?
From the three that we've had, I would say this is probably the weakest so far.
This is, what was the first one that Rose had? New Earth? When she went into the space station.
Yeah,
with...
that was, the we had end Rose to begin end with, and then End of the World.
This is End of the World.
Yeah.
It is effectively End of the World, and End of the World, yeah, is probably about on par with this.
If I was him, I would have chosen, certainly as if it's going for Disney, we've got a whole new market, I would have chosen something stronger to open the season.
Yeah, one thing, I do feel like these first two in particular, the tone is a bit more kiddie, a bit more Sarah Jane Adventures.
I certainly got visions of farting Slovenes in this one. Yeah.
And being gunged.
Yeah.
As happened in Sarah Jane Adventures occasionally, particularly to Clyde.
Yeah. Every chance they got.
Yeah, pretty much.
A lot of people have actually referenced the Sarah Jane Adventures in this particular story.
Maybe it shouldn't be surprising, given that was pretty much the last thing he worked on in the Doctor Whoverse. I can't remember if Miracle Day came after the end of Sarah Jane Adventures.
I can't remember.
But that's a very different, more adult thing. Yeah. You wouldn't target that.
That was deliberately that much. You know, I think, I'm not sure now, but I seem to remember during his first run, the target audiences were between 8 and 14.
Yeah.
That was the I'm assuming that's what he's aiming for now. I think I think with this one, it was a little bit more towards the 8s than the 14.
Yes, I think so, which is an odd way. But I would have thought he might have learnt his lesson with farting bins in Rose.
Yeah.
But he's gone back to that.
I think, as you said, 2017, maybe, I can't remember when the Sarah Jane Adventures finished or even Wizard and Aliens finished. I can't.
Oh, that's true, yes.
I can't remember. But he does seem to have... I don't want to say the writing has regressed, but it does seem to have lost the target audience for this particular one.
Yeah, it's an oddly different tone as well to the Tennant specials we have.
Yes.
Particularly like Wild Blue Yonder.
Yeah.
But we'll see where it goes. It's only first two. So, yeah.
So, like the transmission, we will move straight into the second episode, because it came directly afterwards.
Yep,
the did. Devil's Call.
Dun, 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 dun.
You haven't warmed up on this one after two.
Well, funny enough, I love the colour. I love the way when they come out, it's really subtle, but when they come out, everything is muted, everything is dull, it's slightly sepia.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Magic has gone from the world.
Yeah, it's all got a slight beigeness to it.
Until the final number.
Until the final number. There was a lot about this I liked. I liked the character of Maestro. I think it was played a little too OTT.
A bit panto.
And all I can say is JNT's hand has reached through the He would have been proud of the Maestro. I just looked at the way it was played and everything and went, JNT would have loved this.
It was a very over-the-top character.
It was.
But then, obviously, so was the toy maker.
Yeah, he was a very over-the-top
character.
It's
different. It's over-the-top in a different way.
Yeah, the toy maker was much more sinister with it. And, Neil Patrick Harris is clearly an amazing actor.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Jinx Monsoon is quite to that level.
No. God bless him, her, they, them, she, whatever they want to be called as Jinx.
No, Maestro was she, I think. They. Jinx... No, Jinx is they, I think.
And Maestro was they as well.
Then it's the other way round.
Yeah.
Then it's the other way around. Maestro is they, Jinx is she.
Yeah. She.
I don't know.
good guest star, but don't think you're going to be winning any acting Oscars.
No, but it's that sort of role you can get away with it.
It was deliberately designed that way. It was a disconcerting over the top, which I think was deliberately done.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, lots there were some lovely scenes.
Gurney and laughing and
And the bit where she lost sound.
Yeah.
Doctor nullified
it. The cancellation
I thought that was very well done. Yeah. I thought that was very well done. And I have to ask, the final scene where she's wearing that, or that they are wearing that lovely blue kind of like military thing, and
yeah,
and the, would it be wrong for a heterosexual woman to cosplay a drag queen?
I don't think so. I think
I so want to make that costume.
I think she'd see it as a compliment.
Yeah.
Again, I have only watched this one. Okay. I have no problem with this. As I said, it was deliberately, jarringly over the top,
yeah,
which suited the character and suited the what was going on.
Mm.
Well, yeah, it is a character who is music.
Yeah.
They expect him to be a bit OTT.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah. Larger than life.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a couple of things on this. Did I miss something? When the Doctor took Ruby, but I keep wanting to call her Rose because for various reasons I'll touch on later.
Yeah, yeah.
When Ruby went back, she said music hasn't died, it was alive when I was, and they went in the TARDIS and he was going to take her back. Why did he ask what year she was from?
Did he?
Yeah, what was, because he said, what year is it for you? Now, he must know what year it is for her.
It's a weird thing because it jumped to June.
Yeah, I think...
June, July, 2024.
Because there is a line from Ruby that says, you ran away. You never ran away. This is her, meant to be a second story. How would she know? We've missed a couple of adventures between them.
Must have done.
But he would still know that she was from 2024 because that's when he met her and picked her up.
It depends how many times they've been back home.
I suppose so.
Slipped his mind exactly when, maybe. Yeah, because it jumps from the previous episode. They go back to Christmas Eve in 2023.
Exactly when they left. Yeah.
Yeah. And now suddenly we're in June 2024.
So
quite a jump.
It was something that I noticed and clocked, because certainly with the lines of the dialogue, we have moved forward in their timeline.
Mm.
Things have happened since Space Babies and Devil's Court.
Yeah, she's clearly gone home more than once to have moved on several months. Yeah.
I did like the fact that the ha ha ha...
It was still there.
Giggle.
And the whole hidden song inside Ruby.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if it's deliberate. I'm not sure if Mr. Gold has liked the music. But apparently, according to various YouTubes, there is Ruby's song, or a song that is played when she was dangling above.
Mm. Her own theme tune.
Which is very, very close to the Trickster's theme tune from Sarah Jane.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, I was going to say on that, because the maestro notes with the snow coming down and power like the old one. And was he there?
Yeah.
Now, we know of three people that were there. The woman, Ruby, and the Doctor.
Yeah.
Now, one of them is flipping old.
Yeah.
Is the twist going to turn out that it's Ruby, or is it going to turn out it's the Doctor and he doesn't know that he started the whole game in the first place?
Maybe. Could be. We don't know.
Who knows? Maybe that's Jodie Whittaker under there.
I have to say, I love the music battle. The Devil Went Out to Georgia.
That's what I was thinking. That was the first thing that came to my mind.
The only bit that I really didn't need to get explained turned it a little bit too much. I don't mind the twist. I don't mind the fact they joined in on stage. I love them singing. It was the High School Musical bit in the hallways. There didn't seem to be a rhyme or reason for that. Apart from seeing the maestro's little boy turn up.
No, it works. It works in my head the same way that it worked in Once More With Feeling.
The After Effects are slowly, in Once More With Feeling,
the effects were slowly draining out of the world.
Yeah.
With the maestro, he has eaten music. Mm. Music has gone. Mm. It is now crashing back into the world. There is an overload of it's like as you walk down the street and you sing to yourself or have a quick dance. It was just an overload of that.
Unfortunately, that's what it felt like as well to watch it. It felt like it was just, for me, it just felt like it was more than it needed to be.
I'm not denying that. I mean, I may have drawn the line at the dancing notes on the zebra crossing.
Yeah, they're lighting up.
Narratively, it worked for me. It was everything just crashing back into the world.
Yeah, it could probably have done with a line from the Doctor explaining it or something. But
you can work it out yourself. I like them doing the twist and I liked her singing with Lulu, but it was when we suddenly got into High School Musical in the hallway.
Well,
Maestro's... What was it? The Maestro's sons?
Harbinger turned up at the end.
It's not all completely cleared up.
No, I
think Russell, in his first run, said he wanted to do a musical episode and was trying to figure out how to do it.
Yeah,
and he couldn't do it in his first run.
He's done two now.
Kind of, yeah, yeah.
At the moment, we've got two storylines. We've got the Giggle and we've got Ruby.
Yeah.
They are going to meet.
Yeah, so do they dovetail?
They are obviously dovetailing for the fact that we've got this here, the oldest, he it who was, comes and waits and God
it,
knows
it,
what
it was
is.
Certainly layered very heavily in this one, the fact that she's got a hidden song.
Yeah. I think although they're running as two kind of separate stories, I think they are in some way both going to join at the end.
We have three separate stories, because once again, we had Susan Twist.
Yes.
The dinner lady.
Yeah, always a twist at the end.
It was pointed out on one of the reactors that when she is looking, when the dinner lady is looking into the auditorium, the doctor has his back to her.
Mm-hmm.
When the doctor is looking at the dinner lady, she has his back to him.
Oh, really? Okay, so never see.
So
they never
see.
They never see.
So is it Susan? Is Susan also in her own timeline?
Well, Susan was mentioned because, of course, this was February 1963, 11th, I think, wasn't it? So the doctor points out, I'm living over there with my granddaughter, which is quite nice.
Yeah. And I like the fact that he hasn't entirely ruled out the fact that she might not be dead.
Yeah.
He doesn't know,
He doesn't know. Yeah. So he hasn't said, she is dead. I don't know. So it's slightly in his mind still that she could still be there.
As I said, the actress's name is Susan Twist.
Yep.
She has a very long and extensive IMDb page. Does this mean a thing? Who knows?
I don't know. Is that all fake? I don't know. She's been in a couple of things I recognise, including In the Flesh.
Yeah.
So I keep meaning I've got that on DVD. Maybe I should break it out.
Just have a look.
See if she is really on the credits.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I find it highly suspicious that, as I said, her name is Susan Twist.
Yeah.
And we have that song at the end. It could be I'm just old and cynical.
Well, maybe RTD2 saw her name and thought, oh, excellent, I can do something with this.
I think she's been in every episode since Wildly Yonder.
Oh, I don't know. She's only been in these three.
Newton's landlady.
Oh, was she? Okay, yeah.
In Wild Blue Yonder. I'm not sure about the giggle. I don't know what she was in the giggle.
So she was a jobbing actress.
She was a heckler in the band for Ruby at Church of Ruby Road.
Okay.
So she was the science officer aboard the spaceship.
Yep.
She was the dinner lady here,
mm-hmm.
and she's also the face of the ambulance in the next one.
Yeah.
So she has, so far, she's been in every single episode.
She's got some dirt on RTD.
Yeah, must have.
She's his mum.
She's Ruby's mother, who knows?
I think these are both, I wouldn't have necessarily have put these two
together.
Yeah. They're a bit too similar in their
They're both their tonally light. I don't mean light in story sense, but they're both
tempered.
They've got lightheartedness to them all and that kind of stuff. There's a similarity.
Yeah. If I've got a criticism, I think that's it. I have to agree with you. Like, again, I've said there's a lot weighing on this season because we're meant to be displaying it to Disney to a wider
new audience.
I would have shown the range. I would have maybe moved up Boom to the next one.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
Yeah,
we'll see what the rest of the season brings. But yeah, it is a bit of a shame those two that went out together first are both of the similar, slightly
manic, slightly comical.
Yeah.
And having seen Boom, there was nothing in terms of the arc plots that would have required them to be in the order that they were in, as far as we can see.
No,
there was nothing that you needed to know in that to make sense, if you see what I mean.
One thing I do have to acknowledge Mr. Davis for, whereas other producers have had a problem, is that you don't necessarily need to, unless it's a critical episode or it's a cliffhanger, you don't need to, doesn't matter what order you show these episodes. The arc isn't that strong for you to be confused if it's shown out of order.
I can't believe we've got through 10, 15 minutes talking about this episode and not mentioned the Beatles once.
Yeah.
they were superfluous to the story.
They did solve the problem.
They did solve the problem, but the Doctor created the notes there. They could have been any group from the 1960s. They could have been the Troggs. The Beatles were the big band, the Beatles were associated with the EMI, but if they had found the chord, I'd have got why it's the Beatles and the rest of it. But they didn't find the chord. The Doctor found the chord. You just needed the musician with the heart for music. Well, that could be said about a lot of them at that time.
Yeah, but they got the final note, the Doctor didn't go. But obviously they are the celebrity historical of the season.
Yeah, they were.
So the Black Doctor, anyway.
They were either underused or they didn't need to be there, if you see what I mean. They should have made more of them being the
Beatles.
They
weren't essential to the story.
Yeah, that's it.
Other than if you have a musical historical, who do you go to apart from the Beatles, really?
Yeah.
A lot of big acts in that era. Just because the Beatles are the ones we know now.
Well, that's why you use them, isn't it?
But there were a lot of acts at that time that were still big.
Wouldn't mean anything to most people.
But that didn't make any consequence to me. I didn't mind. It didn't too destabilise the story.
Oh, no.
I thought if you made them a bigger part, that could destabilise the story, and we spent too much time with them.
In fact, you only really see two of them.
Yeah.
The other two.
You see four of them, because at the beginning when they do.
You're only essentially two. And even though I thought that was a wonderful, magical, marvellous scene, certainly with the guy who played Paul, acknowledging that music is still there, he just can't hold it. He can't grip it.
Yeah.
And again, to my mind, it was heartbreaking with the character of John Lennon. So what am I doing here?
Yeah.
You know, what's the point?
It does make sense. It is the Beatles because they're who Ruby wanted to go and see. But it's that kind of like they're necessary, but they weren't necessary in equal measures.
I think they were necessary simply because of those two scenes. Yeah. It shows you how much the world has been shocked, how much the world is changed.
And if it were, say, the Troggs, would you know?
Who
would you choose on the Troggs? Who would you know?
Yeah. Rolling Stones, possibly.
Manfred Mann's bad,
Again, Manfred Mann, I'm afraid they don't have the same weight.
One of them, maybe. Yeah.
I think, as I said, they weren't utilised, but what their input, I think, was significant and important to the story.
Yeah, and a great song too. Yeah. My dog's alive, he's not dead.
Oh, they should have put it on the first album.
They should have. When they did go forward in time...
Yes.
I had a screensaver image that was very, very similar to that of the TARDIS in sort of like London that had been decayed with a red bus and all the rest of it. It was a famous bit of deviant art that went around at the time. And I'm wondering if someone else had seen it as inspiration. Maybe. It was that close. The first thing I went was, is that the same as... No, it's slightly different, but...
quite possibly inspiration. It's not the first time.
Also, a couple of cameos. Murray Gold.
Yes.
On the piano there the musical thing at the end. And June Hudson.
Yes.
Who we've met in person.
Yes.
Who's turned up a couple of times at least in New Who as an actor.
Yeah.
But she was obviously costume designer back in the day, Tom Baker.
The infamous Burgundy.
Yeah, yeah.
Costume, yeah. I don't mean infamous. I don't mean infamous and terrible. As infamous is marvellous and wonderful. I enjoyed it. It's my favourite version.
Okay. And also mentioned again of the toy maker having split the Doctor's soul in half. Yeah. And it's quite an interesting idea.
Unlike what Russell T has said, it's happened for every Doctor.
Yeah.
You got this one time, you got the impression that it was only a one-time thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He says he couldn't survive
it. He couldn't do it again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder if they have to come back together somehow. I don't know if that...
Well,
it was almost like this happened. It wasn't supposed to happen. It was flipping painful.
Yeah.
And we can't do that twice.
Yeah. Well, as you said at the time, it was bi-generation is a myth. You're dealing with a creature that brings myths and legends into existence.
Mm-hmm.
I have it in my head that at some point in time, Dr. 14 is living there happily, going zen, drinking tea, and suddenly gone, yes, that's it, and will promptly disappear in a puff of golden smoke.
Yeah,
maybe.
Because that's his regeneration.
Yeah, but all in all.
Yeah, quite a fun one again, but yes, not substantial, but good runabout, bit of fun. I wouldn't rank it as one of my favourite evers, but I didn't hate it.
No, I wouldn't... slightly above average, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say, I'm with Adam. It's a bit of fun. I would go back and watch it over a shed load of other episodes we've had, but Yeah, it's not a sort of like bottom half of the calendar, but it's not the top half
this
either.
This is it. I've encountered people when it aired on Facebook ranting and raving as the worst Who ever.
No.
I'm sorry. Worse than Creature from the Pit. Worse than Listen.
Worse than Warriors on the Cheap.
Cheap, yeah. I mean, come on, please. Get some perspective.
Also, it's quite nice that I think some of that was actually filmed, shot at Abbey Road Studios.
Oh, yeah.
Because I recognise it, because you often see them, they're recording orchestral stuff in Abbey Road. And that looked exactly the same.
Yeah.
If it wasn't it, they did a damn good job
making
it look like it.
I know some of the sets were built, Abbey Road sets were built, but some of it was...
The real deal.
Real deal.
Right, on that, should we take a break as we did in real life?
Okay.
Before episode 3?
Okay. Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a 30-second recommendation. Woo! So you realise this will probably take a couple of hours. Okay, I would like to recommend to people out there the Dead Boys Detective Agency.
Oh, right.
It's on Netflix. Yep. It is set in the same universe as The Sandman. It features Charles and Edwin. Charles died under traumatic circumstances in the 1980s. Edwin died under exceedingly dramatic circumstances in 1916. Together they have joined up and solve cases for the unvoiced, i.e. they help the dead travel on to the next realm.
And it is really good
fun.
It is
really, really good. I do recommend it.
And the Cat King is hot.
They are joined in their investigations by Crystal Palace, who's a clairvoyant who helps them into various cases.
Like a Neverwhere character.
It is Neil Gaiman.
Indeed.
I think it started life as a one-shot in one of the Sandman stories.
Right.
And then has had life outside, sort of various short runs.
It definitely has that, if you like Neil Gaiman's wonderful way of thinking and seeing the world and that kind of stuff.
It does have a very strong Neverwhere vibe. It does have a very strong Lockwood & Co. vibe.
Makes sense.
It is worth a watch.
It is. It is most definitely.
So, like time flies, we move on. And we watched another Doctor Who story. And it went boom!
Pause for even more music.
I have seen one Facebook, I think some of us have seen it, where someone was put out, aggrieved, concerned, upset, I'm not quite sure how to put it delicately, about the fact that there are religious people with guns in this story.
Oh, this is hardly a new thing.
Yeah, Time and the Angels.
Yeah.
You know,
well, also Crusaders.
Yeah. Yeah, well, indeed, as pointed out in the episode, now it's a bit of a blip. And historically.
A whole group of American sort of evangelicalists who are arming themselves for Armageddon. Yeah. I love this episode.
It's Stephen Moffat.
It's
back.
Moffat.
See, I wasn't madly keen on him as a director, but as a writer, I love his stuff.
I personally have had a lot of trouble with Moffat in the past. When he's off form, he's bad. When he's on form, he is amazing.
Yeah, I think most people agree when he's on form, he's probably the best writer New Who's had.
Yeah.
There are debates as to when he's on or form. But
that is a debate that will go on for the ages. But
this one, I think he was on form.
Definitely.
I think so.
Time Away was a palate cleanser.
Yeah, well, it's been quite a long time. It's been 27 years.
Yeah. God.
For anyone that goes, this is a really good idea, the Doctor stands in a landmine, wouldn't I be interested? He's not the first Doctor to have made this mistake.
I think it was mentioned in the announcer. I've only read the BBC One on air announcer.
Right.
Yeah. Which was said, and now, ladies and gentlemen, Doctor Who starring Shuti Gatwa. Where's Harry when we need him?
Really?
I wonder who writes that. Is it the announcer?
Because I couldn't remember if it was some Tarn experiment or Genesis.
Genesis.
Doctor Stout, but he stands on a boom, boom, boom kind of landmine.
Yeah, an old-fashioned World War II landmine.
And it's only for a few minutes.
Yeah.
This was an interesting concept of absolutely tying the Doctor to one spot.
Yeah.
The story had to come to him.
Yeah. As Shooty said in the Doctor Who Unleashed, he has now one massive glute.
Although the truth is, he didn't stand on one foot for very long.
No.
You know, once he gets the cylinder, he's on 2 feet.
Yeah.
And before that, he's often got the other foot perched on a bit of rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be very hard to stand there and deliver some of those... Well, deliver some of those long
dialogue
without moving, even if you are a dancer.
Yeah. It's an aspect of what we don't see, but I my respect for Mr. Gatwa has gone up. Certainly the when Ruby got shot.
Yeah.
The crying.
Yeah, he seems to cry in pretty much every episode, doesn't he, for some reason
or another.
He's
a much more emotional Doctor.
He is, really is. Yeah. The joy is there, but also the sadness.
I'm waiting to see the anger.
That's going to be the cap.
When they actually give this Doctor, when they give him the story, the script...
The towering rage.
To the towering rage. I think he's going to do a Tennant-type towering rage.
It's which way he goes, because I think Matt Smith was misdirected to begin with, because he used to do towering rage, which, for me, just didn't come off.
Okay.
But it's when he went cold.
Mm. Yes.
Tennant had a white-hot heat to his anger. Smith had an ice cold flame when he did it properly.
I think with Chuchi's Doctor, it'll probably start very quietly. The way that a wife speaks to a husband when he knows he's about to die.
Yeah.
And then it will just turn and it'll be a short, sharp attack. But on this story, I love the fact I think the whole army is now religious.
Yeah.
But instead of sergeant and mate, your vergers, bishops, pastor.
Yeah, we already had Bishop Octavian, was it, from Time Rangers? Yeah. He was a bishop.
And I think the minor grunts were called vergers.
Yeah.
If I remember rightly. Right. But yeah, they're in there. Again, you can see the money being spent on the screen, because this is the first time I think they've actually used the LED screens.
It is.
But yeah,
I'm afraid I could tell it was a studio set straight off. I don't know why. There's just something you can tell.
On Earth.
No. I knew this wasn't filmed in a quarry, so to speak. I knew it was an indoor set, that this hadn't been set up outside.
But even so,
I don't know how. I don't know if it's the sound or what have you. Not to denigrate it or anything, but even so,
because during the Unleashed, you had the guy walking up around the back and around, and you can hear the gravel crunching.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You know, I totally understand why they do it. Yeah.
They put everything down.
I think it was a lovely set.
I thought it looked amazing, and it cost a fortune.
Yeah. I bet it did.
Because it had to be that high, it had to be safe. Yeah. People were running up and down it.
It had to have flames.
Some people were suggesting maybe this is a cheap episode. I think it's actually really quite expensive. Because you had the big LED screen, which they had to get in.
I was going to say, that LED screen's going to cost a fortune to hire.
Yeah.
Because it's state-of-the-art technology.
Yeah.
And also, they built that base camp, which was in, I think, 81 seconds.
Yeah.
That scene.
Yeah.
It took them 4 weeks to build
this
base camp.
That was outside in the car park. And it was on...
So, it's not a cheap episode. And then they had the L1 robots, the ambulances.
Why did he sing the Skyboat song?
Interesting, because it's a Second Doctor thing.
It is a Second Doctor. Yeah, there's recently been on YouTube, Web of Fear, him sitting there playing the recorder.
Mm.
There's a lot of throwbacks throughout this one. There's been a lot of little Easter eggs all the way through.
In this one, particularly, a lot of Moffat throwbacks, understandably.
Yeah.
Like fish fingers and custard and stuff like that.
And where he was calming himself down, he mentioned the President's wife, who he once stole with the moon, or rather the First Doctor stole with the moon.
Allegedly.
You can see Arthur running off with the President's wife. The idea with this one was quite nice. I'm not sure if we've come up with the villainous guard.
Is now a banana grove, according to the Ninth Doctor.
That's right.
And the 12th Doctor...
visited there.
The last one with Rusty was set in Villengard.
I recognise the name. I like these slightly darker, more tense stories.
Yes.
And the whole commercialism of war and
the fact that no villains are actually there. They just landed, deployed the landmines, which started killing.
The politics of war. Again, it's another one having a little dig, really, isn't it?
Commercialisation, yes.
The commercialisation of war.
Just enough to keep it profitable.
I am actually surprised more in America that it's got through. The fact that it was playing a bit on the whole thing of people are fighting on the basis of faith, not rationale.
Yeah.
And faith blinds you to becoming a thinking rather than obedience.
Yeah, faith you don't have to question.
That's the line. You can go so far on faith, but now we're going to stop it and help people. You need proof.
Yeah. Prove it. Now you need proof?
Yeah. I think, again, it's a Moffatism. He's clearly very atheist.
Yeah.
And that always comes through in his stuff, much more than RTD.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Monday's the new assistant as well, isn't she?
Monday is, yeah. This is the point. Is it the same character, or are we having a Freema Agyeman situation?
I think it's the same character. It was on the Confidentials, and Moffat was talking, and he's saying he meets her again. And the fact that he said he meets her again made me think that it's all been tied up and somehow he ends.
Yeah.
So I think it is Monday that she's going to play again.
Monday Flynn, whatever her name was.
Yeah.
But yes, have you seen the InVision commentary on this one?
No.
That's RTD2, it's Moffat and one of the producers.
Right.
Great fun. Those Moffat and RTD.
Yeah, when they get together.
Fun. But there's an implication in there that the character played by Farida Sethu, who's played Monday here, her new character is actually from modern day.
So I
don't know if it's going to be a Clara-type thing.
I don't know. I have seen footage from, not footage, photos from season two recording. Mm-hmm. And the costume she was in there seemed to be a bright yellow sundress. So it's completely different from...
If they're casting her as a whole new character, I hope it isn't a Clara scenario. That it's the same character person just going on and on. It would be nice to either go with the character you've got and put her in a different location, a la Dragonfire and somehow miraculously moving across time or what have you, or you have the Chancellery Guard and then the Doctor.
Freema Agyeman, it was her cousin. Personally, I would like them to continue the character because you get some fun bits with fish out of water, Zoe having to be explained what a candle was.
Yeah.
You know, sort of small things like that. And since the revival, I think every single character has been from present day. I know that's the audience link, but it would be nice to...
Yeah, we nearly didn't get that with Clara. Unfortunately, they changed their mind, yeah.
Yeah. And what do you think of the ambulances that you wouldn't trust with your splinter?
Well, again, it's Miss Twist.
Yes, it is, yeah. Susan Twist. Yeah, you wouldn't trust them because they're not there to save you. They're there just to get the numbers right.
Balance the books.
Yeah, that's it. They're not ambulances, they're accountants.
Mm. Yeah. John Francis Vater, I think his name was.
Yeah.
He is blinded.
Yeah.
It'll take 4 weeks for him to heal, which is too long.
Yeah.
So kill him.
Yeah.
Unacceptable delay.
Yeah. What did you think about the remains?
I thought they should have done a bit more with how creepy that was.
Gooey. Yeah. Well, except the one with John Francis Vater, or whatever his name was, had an eyeball in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one has an ear.
Yeah.
You see an ear. It's a bit like the modern day Ice Warrior weapon.
Yes.
They turned him into cubes.
Yeah.
Instead of this little cylinder now. Yeah.
With your name, rank, and serial number at the top.
And again, a bit Moffat-y, but you've got an AI or a version of their intelligence reanimated by a computer.
One thing I did like about this story, and it is one thing I liked about Russell T's writing in the first place, is that this was a play. It was a dialogue.
Stage play.
Yeah, yeah, there's like four people in this, predominantly.
Yeah, and
it wasn't. It wasn't catchphrases. We did go through a period of time where there was no such as thing as dialogue. It was all like one-liners and catchphrases, and we've got to be quick because we're going on to the next scene.
And Moffat was quite bad for that in many ways. Yeah,
he was very bad for that. And I do like the fact that this felt more pace-wise, in terms of the dialogue and the darkness of it, for want of a better word, a bit more in what we would call the classic Doctor Who ilk.
Yeah. It could have been a stage play.
Yeah, absolutely, it could have been,
But you could have also have had this one with any Doctor.
Oh, yeah.
To me, a really good Doctor Who story is one that isn't dependent upon the character of the Doctor. And I don't mean, because each Doctor is his own character.
Right, I see. Individual character.
That you could put any of the versions of the Doctor in there.
You could quite happily see Tombo in that position, Sylvester in that position.
And it would still have worked as comfortably. And this is one of those stories where I think you could have put any version of the Doctor in there.
And you
would have still had a good, cohesive story.
Yeah, I really liked the way it just kept amping up.
Maybe not Smith, because he moves too much.
Well, that would have been the fun thing. He'd have self-combusted. The fact that he's played on the whole fact of he's an alien and you blow off a planet.
That's the thing. It's
complex space-time event.
That is a Moffatism that turned up in a couple of the books, but never the TV series. The fact that he's a... the only one that he's done of the Virgin books. It turned up in that.
Okay. Oh, wasn't it in Time of Angels? Is a complex space-time event.
But it's only a it's a Moffatism.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But now they can play on it a lot more because of him being the orphan and him also being a twin of himself. And
He's a complex space-time event.
Gone past 13 regenerations and knows where else.
I do like the fact that you're a bog-standard human.
Immediately.
The mind doesn't blow up. It triggers the person on top of it. Mm. So the mind is always there.
Once it's blown up, it comes back again.
Yeah, it's not one and gone.
A cost-effective mind.
Yeah.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, but I also like the fact that because of who and what he is, it would be Praxis. It would take out half the planet.
I liked at the end when all hope seemed to be lost, Monday and Ruby, they just stayed there with him because they knew no point in running.
Yeah.
We're not going to get away from half the planet.
That's it.
It was very much more of an emotional story, this one as well. Yeah.
Particularly as it got amped up and we see Ruby get shot and roll down.
Well, as I said, the noise that he made then.
Yeah.
But again, the snow.
Yeah.
But he's the one that's feeling the emotions, Ruby, because she was unconscious.
Yeah, that, as I said,
possibly
that's...
possibly dead even. At point.
That's what makes me feel that it's a Gestalt, because the snow stopped.
Mm.
It suspended.
Yeah,
but it always seems that the snow's always appearing when he's the one that's getting emotional about her.
I think he's the trigger, as in kicks it off. But I think it only works in conjunction with both of them.
Yeah. It's about Ruby, but it's not Ruby causing the event. He's causing the event.
I think in some way he is causing the event, but as I said, it's a combination of both of them.
Possibly,
they both have to be in the room for it to happen.
Like most Doctor Who stories, the resolution is the Doctor talks his way out of it.
Yeah.
He incites people to act on his behalf to solve the problem. This case is the AI.
As Davros said, you take people and fashion them into weapons, but I don't think it's that. It fashions them into tools.
Yes.
It was certainly within the number 9. Throughout his whole run, he didn't solve the problems, but he made other people solve the problems.
Yeah.
I mean, most specifically is...
the very first episode.
Most specifically is Are You My Mummy and The Doctor Dances. He couldn't have done what he did without Are You... Yes, I Am Your Mummy.
Yeah, and also manipulated Jack into coming back to...
Yeah.
Then the Fourth Doctor used to say to the Brigadier, I'm not here to solve all your problems.
Yeah.
You have to solve some for yourself.
Yeah.
I think he tries to make people work on their best...
Yeah.
Not their best behaviour, to their highest moral value, not their lowest moral value.
He makes people better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I think this is one of those ones that... May get a revisit occasionally. This is on the rewatch list.
It's going to be interesting to see what he does at Christmas. Mm. He's had some great Christmas episodes. He's also had the worst of the Christmas episodes.
Would that involve a wardrobe?
It would. It would.
And then we had the trailer. Have you seen the trailer?
No.
Of course he hasn't.
Right. Yeah. We had the trailer for the next episode.
Yeah, I've seen
the trailer. Because you're going to have to listen to it anyway. All I can say is, I hope it's as good as it looks, because it looks like it's right up my street.
Okay.
It looks interesting. Okay, looks interesting.
I have now seen the next times for episodes 2 and 3.
Yeah.
The one at the end of the first episode, entirely redundant, given the two episodes came out once. But anyway, and they didn't really give much away. I was quite impressed by how little they've been.
They've been very good.
Oh, this the trailer for the next one gives very little away.
Yeah.
Except for I went, Ooh!
It's, yeah.
That looks like my kind of story.
It's intriguing.
Okay.
That's what I'm going
to say. So you suspect it's not going to be in the same tone as the first two, then?
I suspect it's more going to be up Hinchcliffe's Avenue than anywhere else is.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not as explosive or violent, but does seem to be more in boom direction.
Yeah. As in... Or the Wolfie. Yeah.
Try not to look too much at it, but I see the writer is RTD2 again.
Yeah.
So he's written 1, 2, and 4.
He has written quite a lot. I think he's written nearly all of them.
Okay.
Some of the things I've noticed so far, are there only blondes in RTD's universe? Are there no brunettes anymore on the planet?
He has a type. But,
He has a type. It's a frigging clone of Rose all the way. No disrespect to the actress, but we've all gone again for a young blonde.
Make
her a brunette for once. Not necessarily. Yeah, we had one blip in that. She was a redhead.
That's Moffat. And, yeah.
No.
Oh,
Donna.
Donna, of course.
Yeah,
sorry.
Donna.
Yeah, that's true. But that was Catherine Tate.
Yeah. So, and I think if they could have got her to dye her hair blonde, they probably would have.
Yeah.
I love the music, but I hope we're not having musical scores all the way through.
Yeah, I've quite liked the music. In fact, you hear some of his old themes come back. You had Gallifrey turn up for a bit there.
Yeah.
Which is nice to hear.
And I have a sneaky suspicion the Doctor is the one who comes.
The one who what?
He who waits.
Oh, okay.
I think this is the giggle, the whole thing of creating your own enemy.
Maybe. The oldest one or whatever. Yes. Could well be.
Oh, it turns out to be his dad. Or mummy.
Ulysses.
Oh.
So, listeners, you've heard us waffle on.
And rant.
And rant. And argue and agree about the first...
We don't really disagree too badly.
No.
Given some of the wide spectrum of opinions online, we're fairly in agreement, within reason.
Yeah, so you've heard us have thoughts on the first three stories of this new season series, TV run, whatever the hell they call these things these days. So why don't you let us know what you think of the first three and email us at show@staggeringstories.net.
I'm sitting here thinking, why are they looking at me? They're looking at me. I've said my bit. I need to say it again.
Yeah, there's only three of us. You get extra bits. So, El Presidente, do we have feedback?
We do have feedback.
We have one here from Mr. M.
Hello, Mr. M. And I should apologise here, because this one actually made it in time for the last podcast, but was lost in my
You ignored it.
Yeah.
A timey-wimey, lost in space.
It was found. It
is Hello, back. Mr. M. I shall read you, because I care. Hello, team. Long time no write staggerers. I think the main cause of my delay was probably, well, laziness. But I think I could probably manufacture an excuse from somewhere, such as, oh yeah, I was planning to do some audio feedback with fake Mr. M to make predictions for the year, and we didn't. Yeah, yeah, that's my excuse, and I'm sticking with it.
Sounds good to me.
So, on that note, I'm going to take a look back from my predictions of last year and see what I got right or wrong, none of the above.
Ah, good, yes.
Predictions. Star-Lord will die in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Incorrect, although the trailers did make me think that I might be right for a moment there.
Yep, indeed.
There will be two new Hooniverse spin-offs announced, one to debut in 2024 and one in 2025. I will go so far as to predict that the one show will focus on former companions, the other will feature new characters revisiting old concepts / settings from a past Who episode. Well, that was wrong, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, there are rumours about one, which seem to have gone nowhere.
Yep. In fact, I'm surprised that we are yet to hear anything official about spin-offs.
Me too.
Mm.
Christopher Eccleston will decide to return to Who for the 60th and get hit by a bus before he is able to act on the decision. We will never learn of the return that never was.
Mm.
I mean, has anyone seen Chris E. lately? Have you?
Well, personally, although I know he did a convention with Billy Piper recently.
Yeah, there was that. George R. R. Martin will finish writing The Winds of Winter, only to accidentally fall down a flight of stairs and die. The publication will be blocked after being embroiled in several long legal battles. Unless those lawyers are working on it on the sly, I haven't heard any reports of this one.
I don't think he's actually even finished writing it yet.
There will be a new adaptation of the Harry Potter books announced, but as a TV series. Bingo! I'm very pleased I got that one right.
You did, yeah. It's yet to arrive, but yes, it is being worked on.
Fears! There will be too much confusion over David Tennant being the 10th Doctor and Gatois being the 15th. This will cause some damage to the brand and marketing around the time of the 60th. I would say, thankfully, this has been avoided. Brand management has been on point.
Yeah.
After a drought of behind-the-scenes information, we will start to learn much about the new episode, spoiling and or preventing the kind of surprise we got in The Power of the Doctor. I suppose there hasn't been any big surprises or twists as of yet, so I can't comment. Karen Gillan will die after tripping over at the red carpet for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 premiere. I'm sure this didn't happen, as Adam is not a crying wreck.
Fortunately not.
Hopes and dreams. The fake Mr. M and I will get to hang out with the Staggering Stories team again. Unfortunately not. I blame you lot.
Yeah, we should do another meetup, shouldn't we?
Should do.
That was good fun.
Yeah. And that I finally get to have an operation I have been waiting for 3 bloody years.
Wow.
No comment, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, good luck on that.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, then, predictions for 22... Well, that's a bit late right now. Scratch that. Predictions for the rest of 2024.
Okay.
Predictions. First of the new Hooniverse spin-offs will be announced shortly after the final of the new series.
Could be, yeah.
The new Dunk and Egg Game of Thrones spin-off will be more popular with the viewers, but not receive the high ratings as high as House of Dragon. There will be further exploration into the bi-generation in the new series. There will be a cameo appearance from a weeping angel at the year's Christmas story.
Oh, you wouldn't be surprised.
Possibly, yeah.
Fears! The new Who series will not be a success, and that either the BBC or Disney Plus are hoping for, and Disney pulls out of the deal for future seasons.
Ooh, hopefully not.
Hopefully not.
It is a fear, though, yes.
Yeah, definitely a fear. The Daleks will be redesigned as badly as they were last time.
Which last time were you talking about? The Teletubbies or the Junkyard?
I think the Teletubbies.
Right, okay.
But we could include the Junkyard if you want. Yep. Russell T will die.
How would he die?
Doesn't say, just he will die.
Yeah, we have to imagine which ways he could go.
Hopes and dreams. I will get to meet more of the stars in person. Maybe Karen Gillan?
I can recommend this. I met her a couple of times.
Yeah, that's why she's got a restraining order out.
Yeah, she left the country.
Yeah, that tells you something. Yeah. That I will get better at sending in feedback. It would be nice if I won the lottery as well.
Yeah.
Anyway.
£10 goes a long way.
Anyway, that's enough for now, folks. Hopefully, I'll be writing next week with my thoughts of the first 2 episodes of the new series. Mr. M!
Thank you.
Thank you.
Spoilers, but he will be.
Yes.
We have one here from Naya.
Hello, Naya.
Hello, Staggering Storytellers. I am still determined to make Jyoti Gatwa my favourite Doctor. And apparently Rusty has decided to make an uphill climb.
Oh, dear.
What is up with his scripts and the whole Mad Gods of Chaos arc? Although, let's face it, New Who has only ever gotten one season arc right, the original Bad Wolf, where the callbacks were supple enough that you didn't have to ferret them out instead of being slammed in your face every 5th second. Yes, that's why I like the Bad Wolf one. Space Babies. This episode had the added disadvantage of having all the exposition, but when Rose was such a well-told standalone story, why was Space Babies this? Exposition? Check. And not woven in. Ham-handed commentary about refugees and false birth? Check. Inspirational pull-out quote about how nobody grows up wrong? Check. Some jokes about snot and farts that'll land best with the 8-year-old? check.
Well, indeed.
There were some things to appreciate. The nanny filtering of the language was well done.
Yeah, that was very funny.
I loved the Bradbury call-out with the butterfly.
Butterfly effect, yes.
Yep. And props to Tutti for doing such good acting against empty strollers and unhappy toddlers. Someday the kid playing Eric is going to sue everyone for mental abuse. I've never seen such unhappy eyes.
He really did look really concerned with me all the time.
But Disney is obviously being alternatively generous and stingy with the budget. The TARDIS is lovely and solid. As all the lights changed and the switches were slammed, all I could think of was the five-ish doctors with Davison, Baker and McCoy all talking about how fragile and dodgy the sets used to be.
I used to love the wobble.
Yeah.
A pity none of the money went into the villain, who was so obviously the traditional man in a rubber suit. Perhaps Disney was saving it up to pay for those professional dancers for the Devil's Called. They certainly didn't set anything aside to buy air rights for the Beatles songs or even sampling thereof.
That's true.
Yeah, I think that might have made a difference if there'd been a bit of sampling.
I think that was the point.
Yeah.
They weren't the Beatles.
They weren't the Beatles. When they were the Beatles.
It could have ended with that instead of the twist thing.
Yeah. I kept waiting for the banishment call to be the first three notes of Yesterday. I was actually thinking it was going to be the calls of a Beatles song.
Yeah.
Or that single call from the opening of A Hard Day's Night. Something very short, very obvious, and not long enough to require air rights to the whole song.
Yes.
The foreshadowing of the Devil's Called was perfect. Don't play it! One of the people watching called out, not in a Doctor Who episode! And if you're going to have over-the-top villains, Jinx Monsoon was the perfect choice. And having the final solution come from John and Paul was the perfect solution to the argument. I was whispering with another watcher about which of them would resolve it. On the whole, I enjoyed the episode.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Okay.
Apparently, the other unsubtle arc this year is Ruby's connection to Christmas. And I'm already bored of it, which means I'm also rapidly boring of her. Three episodes and she's mostly plucky London teenager number 57, only distinguishable from the others by her Yuletide accessories. But my single and truly serious complaint about the episode is just, what was that hot mess of a song? The dancing was excellent, the music was acceptable, and the lyrics sounded like they'd been written by a space baby. Doctor Who has had some seriously toe-tapping original numbers before, and Murray Gold was literally right there, so I'm not sure what the heck happened. Still, I hold out hope for next week. I'm going to keep holding out hope.
Yeah,
I think it would have been nice if the final calls had a nod toward a Beatley sound.
Yeah.
That may have then made their involvement as well more tangible.
The Devil's Chord to draw the maestro in is different to the chord which will banish the maestro.
Kick her out.
Maybe, yes. Yeah. So we have one here from Jay.
Hello, Jay!
Hello, Staggerers. It's rather weird, from my perspective, to have new episodes of Doctor Who drop at 7 p.m. on a Friday night here in Canada, and getting to watch them before many people in the UK would have gotten a chance to yet.
Boo, hiss, hiss, boo. That's just wrong, I tell you, wrong.
But I suppose that it got me to send some feedback to you.
Yes,
which
it's
done
right,
for a while.
It's right.
If this isn't technically feedback, since I'm not going to be commenting on anything that you've said in the past couple of shows, mainly because I'm still behind listening to them.
Oh, well.
Anyway, after seeing the recent three specials in the new RTD, the second era, I went into this new series, I'm not calling it season one, no matter what they say, they know who they are, with hope and optimism. Two episodes down, I wasn't expecting two episodes tonight, and I have concerns. Let's get one thing out of the way. Absolutely nothing against Shuti Gatwa and Millie Gibson's acting, they're both great, despite what they've been given.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode, Space Babies, had me cringing for a good portion of the episode, especially the latter part when it became apparent as to what the bogeyman was really a few moments before they said it. This, I think, may have been one of those stories where the idea looked good on paper, but when it came to the execution, fell flat. They say you shouldn't work with children or animals, and this is certainly true here. It's pretty hard to take the whole concept of babies are able to control a space station seriously, when these kids are at an age where they probably don't even understand stage direction. I'm sure that the younger audience for which this show was intended, and not all farcers, myself and all of you,
Thank you.
Probably loved it for all of this, though. The next episode, The Devil's Chord, is more fallout from the last special, The Giggle. Here we're really moving hard away from one thing the show always had at its core. Things do have some basis in science to explain what happened. While we kind of veered away from that in The Church on Ruby Road with the goblins, they kind of got away with it, with the goblin science being based on wood and string. There was no such out with this episode, and it was pretty much full-on fantastical, with ropes of basically sheet music interacting with the physical world. Also, I felt like Jinx Monsoon as Maestro was trying to channel Neil Patrick Harris, but falling somewhat short in really being able to pull it off what he can. The ending of this episode just felt totally weird and unfinished as well. Sure, music is now back in the world, but there's 40 years when it hasn't been around. Did Bashing Maestro somehow fix all of that? Are things back to how they were? Or how will humanity's history have been affected going forward? Might have been nice to actually touch on that instead of having a weird dance number. Even if it did get Murray Gold a chance to do a cameo. As himself somehow. At least according to the credits. He looks the same now as he did in 1963. That's a neat trick.
He's got a painting.
There are some interesting, intriguing things to forward the probably season-running plot, the mystery of Ruby Sunday. Nothing looked wrong with the DNA scan of her that the Doctor had the TARDIS do at the end of Space Babies, but we did get to Snow in the TARDIS during it. Also, the figure we presume to be Ruby's mother, pointing at the Doctor in the memory for some reason. Then there was that noise the Doctor remarks that the TARDIS was doing after they had fast returned back to Abbey Road. Not much yet. Hopefully those will be significant down the season. Anyway, I think that's all I've got for now. Keep doing very well. Jay.
James, you should remind me of something that I meant to mention. I did like when they did the scan. The scanner is the shape of the new Sonic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, on the wall. That's what it is, yeah.
I thought that was a nice little touch.
And also something I just remembered, certainly doing the Devil's Core, is they're playing around with the fourth wall.
Yes, because she smiled.
Well, she smiled.
They smiled.
You had the Doctor wink just before we had the big musical number.
Yeah. Mm.
You had the Doctor wink directly at the camera. You had Maestro playing in
the Doctor Who theme tune.
Which went to the Doctor Who theme tune and then went to the jukebox.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think there was a line from the doctor saying, I thought that was...
Non-diegetic.
Thank you. I thought that was non-diegetic.
Yeah.
So they are playing fast and loose with the fourth wall.
They are.
Yes. Yeah. I know what he means. I prefer it when it exists in reality rather than its own fiction. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, obviously the toy maker here
has mucked about with reality.
Things a bit. Or like we've joined Land of Fiction, which is a different thing. But
we have another one from Jay.
Oh, hello, Jay again.
Wow. Hello again, Staggerers.
Hello.
I'm getting ready to write this massive to you. I realise that I'm going to have two pieces of feedback for you in one episode. Ha-ha! That's a first. Anyway, a note on Boom, third episode of Series 30. If we're going by the old calendar, or Series 14 by the new, or... Nope, I'm still not going to call it Season 1. I admit that I had a lot of trepidation before this episode. I very nearly decided to leave it for a few days to see how bad the internet thought it was.
Oh, really? Okay.
But then I said to myself, no, you can't call yourself a Doctor Who fan and hide from an episode like that. Besides, this episode is penned by none other than the Fast Toffee.
Amen.
In his first time back since stepping down as showrunner.
Yeah.
And it would be very interesting to see how one of his scripts does that he doesn't have the weight of the entire show on him. And oh boy, did he deliver.
Oh, yes.
In this story, I felt like we have the Doctor back.
Yeah.
Cast-wise, this story is pretty small,
but
it's just the right size.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Church Army, who we last saw back in the Matt Smith era, and the two we lost right at the beginning sets the scene for the story going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Enter the Doctor and Ruby, with the Doctor putting a foot wrong, the stakes are set.
Mm.
Then Ruby ups the stakes with getting too close to providing the counterweight.
Mm.
Stakes raise yet again when the young girl Splice comes barreling in.
Yes,
just like the Doctor keeping his foot on the landmine, Moffat, as well as the wonderful directing from Julianne Robinson, never takes their foot off the gas pedal, as the stakes continue raised to a point where half the planet can be wiped out. Of course, we know the Doctor isn't just going to get emulated by this mine, but the tension is risen as the green lights tick down to make us forget that.
Yeah.
But perhaps the best of all is there is no bug-eyed alien monster that's evil here.
Yeah. Mm.
There's no Castorians. There's just the Villengard Corporation. Yeah. Who I think we can assume are pretty much human,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Beside it all, who are profiteering off of war. When was the last time that ultimately humans were the big, if unseen, bad, and no alien in sight?
Mm.
I'm hard-pressed to think of any time in New Who, so I welcome this.
Mm. Mm. Possibly Kablam?
Possibly, yeah. I'm not sure that I totally buy into the digitized John Vater being able to date down the whole of the Villengard's mainframe, though. Maybe just on this planet, but the whole shebang? Nah. Finally, yeah. Let's give a shout-out to... I'm going to mangle this name, I apologise. Finally, let's give a shout-out to Varanda Shooty.
Varada.
Varada Shooty. Thank you.
Sethu.
Thank you. As Mundy Flynn,
mm.
making a very good appearance in Doctor Who. But by no means the last, as she's the actor, at the very least,
yeah.
will be back for the next season as a companion.
Yeah.
We don't know if this will be Mundy's returning or a different character, but wouldn't it be rather interesting to have one of the Anglican army in the TARDIS?
It would.
It certainly changed up the perspective for a bit,
yeah, yeah.
But it's just as well may not be, because Mundy should be looking after Splice.
Yep.
That's all for now. Titty-boo.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, it depends on when in the timeline we pick her up.
Yeah.
Because Splice wasn't a kid.
Yeah.
So 5 years down the line, Splice may well be in politics and university.
5 or 10 years, yeah. She's destined to be a president of something or other.
Yep.
We have another one here from Maya.
Hello, Maya.
Hello, Staggering Storytellers.
Hello.
I was very excited for the first Moffat episode of the RTD era, and while it was no Blink or Empty Child, Boom did not disappoint. I do have my doubts about the mental development of that child, the character, not the actor.
Yeah, well, I did.
But all the adults had absolute banger lines, especially the Doctor. I forgive you for being incredibly stupid with sheer perfection. Also, he has a lovely singing voice. I screamed at the first iteration of Thoughts and Prayers, a line that hits hard in this country, and Moffat deployed it perfectly. A shallow, useless pastor after an act of unreasonable, unnecessary violence that only serves to make money for some shadowy group. I'm assuming that Moffat's issues with the Church of England hit harder, where it's the state religion and not one of hundreds of variations on a theme. Now, we're also un-church-going in this country. We didn't bloody notice, I don't think. The internet has reminded me to stop being upset that Doctor Who is camp because it's always been. The internet has also started drawing connections to a much more subtle thing, like the billboard in The Devil's Called calling back to the music group Susan was listening to in An Unearthly Child.
Yeah.
Missed that.
Yeah, I did see there was a musical group on there after things were put back to normal.
Yeah, it must have been Ujima Flips and the so-and-sos.
John Smith and the...
Common Men,
yeah. More than that, internet conspiracy fans are ferreting out exciting hints to a potential season arc underlying the obvious bits about Ruby and Snow, which we presumably all wrap up in a literal bow next Christmas.
Probably.
I'm not going to spoil the speculation, just point out the observable fact there is one person beside Chuty and Millie who has appeared in every episode so far. Maybe it means nothing. Maybe it's another Easter egg, like having Tom's costume designer have a cameo. But even so, it's the kind of clue hunt that I love so dearly, because it allows we the fans to look deeper instead of just watch and a pin. Naya.
Yes.
Thank you, Naya.
Perhaps Susan is the one who is coming.
Perhaps. Yeah, dirty girl.
Got pissed off with her father, a grandfather, leaving her there with the Daleks and banding her in. And
nothing but a key.
Nothing but a key, and didn't come back and check, and got all bitter.
It depends how much you believe in Big Finish, I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, interesting. Yeah, so clearly, third episode has gone down well so far with the listeners.
Yeah.
Let's see what Mr. M has to say about the first three. Hello, team.
Hello, Mr. M.
So there have been three new episodes already. We're almost more than a third way through the season. It's only been a week.
Yeah.
But look, it's still the most episodes we've had in one go for more than 4 years. I suppose we shouldn't complain too much. Space Babies. I was struggling to form much of an opinion on this one. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad. It was just all right.
Yeah.
I liked the Space Babies, though they looked very odd.
Mm-hmm.
Bogeyman was a fun monster. 15 and Ruby are really working very well together. And the production all round is looking superb. The episode just sort of passed me by. I think that this could well be put down to its function as a jumping-on point for new viewers. And that much of those beats and moments throughout the episode may well be what is leaving those blank spots in my feelings towards the episode. I'm not the target audience for this one, but I still enjoyed it. 6 out of 10. Mm. The Devil's Chord. Now, this one I loved. I do think it helped that I did not watch the first two episodes back to back. I watched episode 1 before heading off to work, and watched episode 2 when I got home. So I think my mind was much fresher for this. As I watched the episode, I would have to say I struggled to find a single thing I didn't like. In fact, there was much that I really, really liked. It was chaotic fun, with some great performances, some nice moments of tension and contemplation, and a musical twist at the end. I think I would have to give this a solid 10 out of 10. Wow. High praise there. Boom. Well, this is very much a standard issue Moffat episode, but that's no bad thing. I did hear a lot of hype about the tension in the episode beforehand, and I was really surprised to see that the episode did actually deliver on it. Shooty's performance was great in this. He really is a terrific Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I've only watched this once at the moment, so I do have a little bit less to say. But overall, I really enjoyed this one as well. 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
In general, I'm really pleased with the variety that these three stories have brought us so far. The tones have varied wildly, and I hope that each episode will bring us something different from what has come before. Oh, and I hope that the one who waits is the trickster from the Sarah Jane Adventures. Mr. M.
Thank you, Mr. M.
P.S.
Sorry.
I like the little tweaks they've done to the title sequence. It works much better now.
Yeah, they were quite good. I enjoyed that. Right, what else have we got?
P.S. Oh, I think the new companion actress, she'll be playing the same character, maybe, is great.
And she's not blonde.
Not yet.
Thank you, Mr. M.
Thank you, yeah. I think you're probably the most upbeat on all three.
Yeah.
Particularly Devil's Chord, 10 out of 10. Wow. Double check nothing else has come in and hidden, smuggled away in the spam folder again. Right, and to finish off our feedback then, we have an audio feedback from Tim, from Tim's Take On.
Hello, Tim!
Hello, Staggerers. Hello to the Menagerie, Dangerous Churchill, Cardboard Amy, the Head of Pertwee, and all that. And it's Tim from Tim's Take On here.
Hello!
Long time since Tim. I've sent one in, I guess. But Doctor Who is back. Slight content warning first. I'm currently suffering from absolutely chronic insomnia due to the heat and due to having a bad neck. And I'm barely sleeping. So my days have just been constant stress and tiredness.
Yeah.
And I'm not even nodding off during the day. I'm just sort of constantly on edge. So I might get a bit ranty.
Okay.
I certainly did on my own show.
Right.
So they hit the iPlayer at midnight, and I said to myself, I am not staying up to silly o'clock. I keep falling asleep watching Professor T on ITVX already.
Mm-hmm.
So I instead lost sleep that night photographing the aurora. Didn't leave the house, but at 1 a.m. I managed to get a bit of green sky from the bathroom window. So that was all right.
Me too.
I said to myself, because there's two, at least for week one, because I have got things coming up that eat into my weekends and sometimes my Saturdays, probably just for week one, I'll watch them on Saturday afternoon. So that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't too torturous seeing all the talk on Facebook for about 13 hours.
That'd be fairly restrained,
actually. That wasn't that annoying.
Yeah.
The surprising thing, particularly when I came to actually watch these, was how positively they were received. So I've fired up Space Babies again on the iPlayer on one of my phones, and there's going to be some sort of rants out of my head. One of my main problems with all of this, and I've only heard the Radio Free Scaro guys' review so far, was... Yes, I know they've gone off into the realms of fantasy now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of weird stuff happening.
Yeah.
But there was, and you could see glimmers of it and hear glimmers of it in how well some of the lines were written. Mm-hmm. And this is a general overall thought, certainly for Space Babies. Lots of stuff happened.
Yeah.
And there was sort of the odd nice line here and there, but it didn't properly sort of gel and hang together. And I thought, well, particularly as What have I been watching recently? Yeah, my rewatch is on sort of mid to late Capaldi at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that has its troubled times, does the Capaldi era, but at least it all sorts of flows together and it makes logical sense. And my problem, particularly with the first one of these, oh, and I've reached that horrible butterfly gag at the moment. Goodness knows how many hours they had Millie Gibson in makeup.
Yeah.
But they do a whole gag where they cover her in a prosthetic and then the next minute it's gone. I mean, that's sort of showing off about the amount of money you've got.
Well,
particularly
you've got
as that was in the trailer. And so, you know what us fans are like and how we kind of start headcanoning things and trying to... And I don't normally make up plots, but there's been so much expectation that you see that in the trailer and think, oh, is the whole story going to be getting her restored to human? No, it was a gag. A gag that was seconds... And must have taken many hours to shoot due to the makeup.
Yep.
And I went, what a waste. And that sort of wound me up at the first sort of hurdle. And that's just in the first 6 minutes of the show.
Gotta let them have their fun.
Then the whole, even just the whole space babies idea, I found a bit too much of a stretch, a bit too far for me to grasp and embrace. I mean, the whole making them talk thing was well done. And there are some nice ideas in this, like the nanny filter.
Yep.
Because that poor lonely accountant woman...
Jocelyn.
At first you think the nanny is like a computer talking to them and looking after them.
Yeah, yeah.
Then
yeah.
you discover it's actually her talking into a microphone, being filtered by an AI. And then if she, like, swears, it gets turned into another set of word, which was... quite a nice gag.
She was very
it
swearing.
Wasn't funny, she but was. It was a nice idea. As for the bogeyman, that's all right. I mean, one of my problems of having insomnia is weirdly it makes me almost hyper-focus on things.
Mm.
And even though they show the bogeyman through, like, CCTV, my hyper-focus made it, that's a guy in a suit.
Oh,
and so that sort of ruined it for me, even after years of watching guys in suits on Doctor Who.
But then it's meant for humor.
Now we know we've got all this extra money. It's a bit kind of like, they look a little bit better than that. I mean, the sets are amazing.
Yeah.
The direction is amazing. There's a lot of good stuff going. The design is not bad. The design is pretty good as well. So, yeah, it's all right. I don't want to go on for too long. I realise I sent one of these in a few months back and it ended up being 15 minutes long. So I'm just going to play both of them in front of me and have a few thoughts for you rather than rant on for 15 to 20 minutes, which goodness knows I've done enough of that on my own podcast. I stopped the audio recording at the end of, I think it was The Devil's Chord, and I'd recorded for 15 minutes something. I went, I really didn't like that, did I? Because if you like something, sometimes it's almost hard to talk about because it's kind of like it becomes comfortable if you like it. But if you don't like it, it really grinds your gears and it gives you something to rant about.
Yeah.
By listening to Radio Free Scaro this afternoon as I record this, the actor in the opening scene is actually the brother, I think, of someone from the Radiophonic Workshop, which is a nice touch.
Okay.
As she appears fairly early on, I'm going to rant about Jinx Monsoon right now.
Okay.
And I speak as an LGBT ally and a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race, less so the American version, definitely the UK version.
Okay.
But Jinx Monsoon cannot act to save their life. The whole thing was very one note performance. It was high camp, very loud, very extreme, but that's all it was for 50 minutes. And gritting my teeth every time they were on screen. It was so hard to watch that sort of thing.
Mm.
And camp can be done well in drama. Camp can be sinister. I mean, as a good example, you've got Joel Grey in the movie Cabaret. That's camp, but it's sinister. It's dark. And I'd have loved them to do drag, or, well, I say drag, they're not drag, they're a trans lady, but to do camp but make it dark. And it was a missed opportunity for that.
Mm, yeah, and the whole...
He's called Harry Harbinger, and then magically the words change to Harbinger. And I'm going, no. It's this sort of style over substance. Stuff is happening because it has to happen rather than it would happen. What else is in the episode? The people are in it.
Character.
There's music, and I have to use quotation marks at this point, because the plot is that music has been taken out of the world, but it hasn't. It's just been replaced by really bad music. Speaking as a huge music fan, there's nothing more teeth-grinding than really bad music. And there's Cilla Black in it. And the Beatles themselves are reasonably well portrayed, and it was good to see their legendary producer George Martin in there as well.
Right.
The whole thing felt a bit too rompy for me, because he doesn't use the psychic paper. He just wanders in a room with a cup of tea and goes, oh, don't mind us.
Classic.
And if you were busy recording this band you were proud of and you just found and you want a bit of peace and quiet, some stranger wanders in,
you're in the going,
place. Act like your own place, and people accept.
It wasn't even any of that. So the psychic paper would have been a good idea, because he could at least say, oh, we're like whatever, maintenance engineers or something. He could have like blagged their way in. Oh, God, I'm seeing Jinx Monsoon on my phone at the moment, and I can't even watch it.
I didn't notice it wasn't there, but now you mention it,
Nice Easter eggs, although it does feel now that they're only really putting Easter eggs in so they can talk about them on their official podcast, which is now worryingly co-presented by someone described merely as a content creator. So you're not even a Doctor Who fan, you're just a rent-a-gob, as I call them. Someone who's paid to talk for a living.
Yeah.
The title sequence is nice. I mean, the cold open to the title sequence on the second one wasn't quite as long as on the first one. The first one had about 6 or 7 minutes before we even got to the title sequence. Murray Gold's new version of the Doctor Who theme. All this whispery vocals, which sound like they're actually saying Doctor Who, Doctor Who, Doctor Who. And while we're on the subject of music, I've covered the really bad songs, and there's also a nod to Pyramids of Mars, because Ruby's taken to what the world would be like if they don't defeat Maestro. Yeah, yeah. You have the horrible, heinous aberration that is the closing musical number. Now, I don't mind a good musical. There's some very good modern musicals out there. There's a great musical on the West End right now.
Back to the Future.
Everybody's talking about Jamie over Easter. I went to see Book of Mormon, which is hilarious.
Everybody's talking about Jamie. It's so good
that I listened to the soundtrack of it later on YouTube. There's some really catchy songs in that. But Murray Gold cannot write a song for Toffee.
Oh,
they should have learned this by now.
He did Song for 10,
which never chimed well with me. And this thing... it's catchy, albeit after the event catchy. It wasn't catchy at the time, and it wasn't catchy when I rewatched it in the evening. But hearing other, even just hearing other people talk about it this afternoon, put it back in my head.
Yeah.
So it's got some kind of weird power about
it. It's catchy like the plague.
But that doesn't mean to say it's good.
Like the COVID.
And it was just so long. It just felt like they'd thrown everything at it, and it was a bit kind of, oh, well, we've got the money, we've got the resources, we can have Johannes and Shirley from Strictly cameoing in it. There was just no need for it. The Goblin song, I'm not sure who wrote that, but that wasn't great either. But at least it wasn't very long. Oh, and while I'm on about that, because I rewatched Church on Ruby Road recently, the Doctor magically knows the name of the singer in the Goblin band.
I don't think it's her real name.
He says, "Hit it, Janice." How does he know this?
I think that was just a throwaway.
I guess Time Lord brain reading powers were meant to
think. I don't think it's a real name.
I think you're reading too much into that.
The look and feel of The Devil's Chord is great. It does feel like they're in the 1960s.
Yeah, oh yeah. Mm.
As I say, the representation of having George Martin there as well as the Beatles and all that sort of thing, that's quite well done.
Yeah.
And it was nice to touch on the fact that Ruby can play piano and having watched The Doctor Who Unleashed, boy, did they go to a lot of trouble for this episode. They hired two mobile cranes to get stuff actually on a roof just to shoot a relatively short scene. But that's the sort of money they're dealing with now.
Jeez, yeah.
Oh, God, I've been going for over 15 minutes. I'll try to tie stuff up. So the fact that the writing has slipped downhill quite so quickly, particularly after the Tennant specials, all three of those are pretty good.
Yeah.
The middle one, the Wild Blue Yonder, was so amazing, I think it will go down in history as a classic. Mm. And The Giggle's pretty good too.
Yeah.
But these two, it's very rare that I say this. They were so bad at times, it was hard to watch them.
Mm.
And when I did review them myself immediately after, and also in Facebook discussions, I actually used the word atrocious for the first time ever about a Doctor Who story.
Yeah.
Oh, well, as I record this, we're just a few short days away from seeing Boom, which you'll have seen by the time you listen to this.
Indeed.
And the return of Stephen Moffat. So I'm crossing everything that his episode and the one from the Loki writers coming up later in the series, that those ones are better. Because at the moment, it's feeling very disjointed and a bit thrown together, and I came up with this theory that because he's executive producer, RTD had had to spend so much time in meetings with Disney people that he didn't have enough time to work on the scripts. So it's sorry to say that, because he is a good writer, and he's proved that in recent years with things like It's a Sin, which is incredible. Right. So I will leave you to get on with the rest of the podcast. Bye for now, and hopefully you can join me on the Sharda tour in the summer.
Thank you. Yes.
Pluck, pluck.
29th of June, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you didn't enjoy those, Tim. I really am.
Grumpy Tim. Yeah. They are very clearly not for everybody, those two episodes, as has been shown on Facebook. There are people who really hate them, and, you know, this is the end of Doctor Who.
I would like to take the opportunity to point something out to people that I have pointed out on Facebook to certain other people before, and I think I've mentioned it here. It is all right to fall out of love with something. You change, it's change. It may not connect in the same way.
Maybe.
That is fine and perfect. But please, just walk away. Don't sit there and watch it so you can be outraged. That is slightly sad.
The thing about Doctor is every episode is potentially completely different to the one before. Yeah. So if you don't like one or even two in a row, there's a good chance there'd be ones in the season you will like. There are people out there who seem determined to hate everything, and Tim is certainly not one of them.
Well, there's some of them already criticising it before it had even been released. Yeah. I mean, I think
the other thing is we... I sold it up to Hey.
That's old farts.
It's not the same programme that we watched when we were kids for several reasons. One is we're not kids anymore. Yeah. And even if...
Mentally, maybe.
No, but if we saw... If these are episodes written for the children of this day and age, they were episodes written for the children of that day and age.
Yes.
We aren't kids. We are not the ones that these are being written for. We are the parents now that can sit and watch it and not be offended, or can happily sit there and, you know, it's okay, I can watch this. But we're not the target audience anymore.
No, and even if we were kids now, the kids of today are not the kids that we were back then.
No, that's
very different.
That's what I was trying to say, you could put them in front of the Who we watched and they'd go, this is boring. It's written for the time that it's being shown in, and it ain't our time anymore.
No.
All we can do is you either still enjoy it for what it is now, or you enjoy your DVDs. But you can't make that program now what it was, because time has moved on, society's moved on, people have moved on. the human race has evolved or devolved, depending on your point of view.
Yeah.
Tim pointed out something we have totally forgotten.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
Go on, then.
He's behind you.
Yeah.
Hello, head of Pertwee.
We didn't quite forget you.
No, we got you. Handles, Inky McSquirtsalot, Graham, Dave Zilla the Mighty, Terence. Am I the only one naming things here?
You're the only one.
Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spock, Grunhilde Knobknacker, Embarrassed Clara.
What embarrassed her? I'm not going to embarrass her.
I don't know, but she's orange, apparently, so she's all curled up in the corner there.
And various other weird and wonderful things.
Yeah, indeed.
So, is that all the feedback?
It is, I think, yes. Hopefully, I'm not missing anything, but yeah, I think that's plenty enough for today.
Yes.
Thank you all. That's really good stuff.
I've got a 52-mile drive, yeah.
Yeah. But please do send in more next time.
Yes. Yep.
The merrier. Yeah. Lots of interesting stuff to talk about.
Let's know what you think of the next two episodes. Well, we're not going to wind our way out because I can't do it. Neither of these other two can do it because, like, without Crumbly, we are nothing. We are nothing.
Come back to us, Crumbly.
He is the maestro and he has stolen the words from us. For he is the keeper of the outros. So I think in best forms, I'm just going to say, this is Gene saying au revoir.
Goodbye.
Who I am is where I stand. And where I stand is where I fall.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 446, featuring Adam J. Purcell, Gene Riddler, and Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are those of the speaker and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this is an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
Thank you.
I've got a dog, he's called Fred. My dog is alive, he's not dead. I love my dog, he loves me too. I haven't got a cat, only a dog.
My dog, my dog, my dog, my dog. I've got a dog, I love my dog. He's my dog, he's not your dog. If you want a dog, it's your own.